All right, you're back in the DFSR here with our NFL podcast for Friday, October 20th. I'm Doug Norrie, that is
James Davis.
And we are from Daily Fantasy Sports Rankings.
Why are you talking so slow?
I'm enunciating it so people can stop.
Gotcha. Okay.
It's enunciation. I was listening back to the podcast the other day and I realized I was speaking a little fast. So now I'm going to work on my enunciation and slowing it down a little bit.
All right, cool. Take two. Get 3, 2, 1, go.
All right. Welcome back into the Daily Fantasy Sports Rankings.com, DFSR.com for short, /NBA. Gets you that free 3-day trial to our projection system, which is on a pretty much of, I guess you would call it a heater to start the NBA season. If you count Sunday's NFL and then the beginning of basketball season, you've more than made up the price of admission for our subscription package. So go check that out. It's free for 3 days. And then I think our prices go up today. So it's going to be, what's the new price?
It's going to go up to some price that I haven't announced yet because it's not actually up yet. Okay. It's going to be up beginning of next week, actually.
Okay, so there you go. You got the weekend. This is good to have these business calls at the beginning of podcast too. Go check that out at dfsr.com/NBA. You won't be sorry. And if you want proof in the pudding, go to our chat room and just ask our many, many users who are in there all the time talking about all kinds of sports if it is worth it for the subscription. They will give you their honest opinion, and then you'll end up going signing up anyway. So, all right, today we're going to be breaking down every game or doing a game-by-game breakdown for Week 7 in the NFL, coming off pretty exciting Thursday night game between KC and Oakland that was just an absolute shootout, basically between Smith and Carr. Carr gets the late touchdown to Crabtree, and they win 31-30. Yeah. And really the story was Amari Cooper, who had been basically non-existent for many, many weeks during the season, and then just absolutely completely erupted last night for what I believe is the best receiving game of the season. I don't think, 11 for 210 and 2 touchdowns, I believe, is the most fantasy points for a receiver in a given week, though I didn't completely check that. Either way, it was completely out of the box. And if you played I didn't really play the Thursday lineups last night, still stuck here in stupid Louisiana, where DFS has been outlawed. So, but if you were in on those Thursday night slates, you really needed to probably have one of the two quarterbacks and then probably Cooper as well. So we're going to get into some of the games going on this week. A lot of stuff to talk about, some injury stuff that's crept up. Little stuff that's crept up during the week, nothing too major. Some good games going, some bad teams playing each other. So let's just get into it. First game, 1 o'clock. Oh, start off really with a bad game right away. Jets and Miami. We talked. Yeah, no kidding. Like, I cannot believe it. I mean, the real surprise here is that Miami's 3-2. I think the Jets are like 2-3 too. Like, it's like, I thought for sure when we looked at these two teams at the start of the year, there was just no possible way. I thought that we'd be kind of going in and like an 0-5, 0-5 sort of thing going into this game. Yeah, Jets are 3-3. Dolphins are 3-2. So these two between the two of them.
It's a battle, dude. This has playoff implications.
Well, I mean, there's no
way. Have you looked at the standings? So one of my Facebook friends posted recently. They were like, what do all these things have in common? And this was, I think, going in last week, but it was like every single team had a 2 in either the wins or the losses. And if you look at, except for like one, it's like Cleveland in the AFC. And right now it's crazy. It's like the AFC East is New England at 4-2. Last place is the Jets at 3-3. Then you have Kansas City 5-2, Chargers 2-4. Then, you know, the North has Cleveland, which, good job, guys. And then the South has Tennessee at 3-3 leading the division, Indy at 2-4 in last place in the division. Like, it's just, this is what parity looks like, folks. A bunch of average teams that are really boring to watch. So, congratulations, we got there.
Yeah, no, this is exactly what it is. And it's why the Giants can go into Denver and just, like, win with a decimated team. Because the, you know, we talked about this earlier in the week, but the talent, it just seems like the talent level in football is pretty smoothed out. There's, you know, there's five to ten really good quarterbacks, and then everyone else is just kind of the same team trading and swapping around wins. So the Jets this week are going to get Bilal Powell back. I don't think it matters really at all for really anyone's purposes. Any fantasy implications on the other side of the ball here? Devontae Parker going to be out again, it looks like. We did talk in depth about Jarvis Landry yesterday in our cash game breakdown. Besides Landry, who we talked about yesterday, on either side of the ball here, anyone you're interested in for rostering?
Yeah, no, I really like Landry still. I maintain that he should be a chalk cash game guy. Tomorrow, And will be until he at least he tops the $7,000 price point on FanDuel. The other guy that you can consider basically for big tournaments, and I think he's really the only other guy here that I'm looking at, is Jay Ajayi. The touches really have been there the last couple of weeks. He hasn't turned it into a huge fantasy performance yet, basically because he hasn't been able to get in the end zone. But if that changes, getting a guy who had 27 and then 26 touches in the last 2 weeks, that's significant, you know. And then, you know, had a really good average against Atlanta too. You know, there's a lot, obviously a lot of downside risk, but if there's anyone else you could consider from this game, he is getting among the highest overall usage of anyone kind of in that price range. So Jay Ajayi maybe for big tournaments. Otherwise, it's a pass.
I don't mind Austin Seferian-Jenkins at tight ends. He saw 11 targets last week. He's been they have kind of heavily targeted him. He doesn't, it's not a big yards guy, and he's not really ever going to be. He's running short routes from account, but he did put up an 8 for 46 and a touchdown multiple weeks in a row where he's caught a touchdown. He actually fumbled one as well. So ASJ, I think, will be, his price has come up a little bit, so it's not a lock. Like, we were getting a pretty good deal on him before. He's up to 5900 on FanDuel. That's not necessarily a deal for him anymore, in sort of like that we've called it the tight end carousel or tight end dartboard that you're kind of throwing just kind of darts at. He's getting up toward probably the top end of his price, so I'm not as excited as playing him there. And then I'm with you too. Ajayi looks interesting. Landry seems like he's kind of the guy. Kenny Stills possibly sees more targets here without Parker. Other than that, really, I mean, look, as when you have Jay Cutler and Josh McCown, I know these two teams have won a couple games. The quarterback play in this game is pretty damn bad. And that's it's really the only speaks to Landry, the fact that they've targeted him so heavily that he's really in play. Otherwise, this is probably a game you can completely avoid. Yep. Tennessee goes into Cleveland. We saw that they just, you know, getting Mariota back really is a difference here for Tennessee. One piece of injury news on them is whether or not DeMarco Murray is going to play or not. So if last week, actually, Derrick Henry did out-snapped and out-carried Murray last week. It could have been an injury thing. It could have just been kind of game script the way that the game was kind of going. This is a situation we've been waiting to see. Yeah, he did. They basically split snaps, and Henry out-carried him 19-12. DeMarco Murray, if he were to sit here, where would you view Derrick Henry's place in, like, sort of like the cash game kind of hierarchy?
Pecking order there, yeah. I think that he would be in the same conversation as guys like Peterson and Ingram. I mean, we saw him go off last week, even with the presence of Murray. If this were a bad matchup, I wouldn't be considering him very much. But given that they're going up against Cleveland, they're 5.5-point favorites. Henry seems more than competent when actually given the ball. His actual rushing averages last game were excellent. You know, it's kind of, you don't want to look too carefully at the prior weeks, because basically when a guy's not your starting running back, oftentimes he's put in kind of short yardage, weirdish situations. So not at all worried about the 4 for 9 against Miami or the 6 for 7 at Houston. I think if he were to go into Cleveland and be the starting back here with no Murray, we also know that Tennessee is happy to run the ball, especially if they manage to get up. So yeah, I think Henry would be an excellent play. 5600 is just a steal for a guy who would be, I think, a favorite to get 20 or more touches here.
Yeah, I think we'd be looking at him as a chalk play at 5600. It's really that price. 5600 is just so low.
It's like the ideal punt. You know, we often talk about this in the ebook too. Like, it's when you get a guy who we're already kind of looking at when there is competition. If that competition goes away, he just becomes a slam dunk. So great spot.
Yeah, no, so we'll keep an eye on that. It seems like, you know, I don't think he's practiced all week, and the coach here, according to Roto World, says that he isn't guaranteed to play. They did sign a backup running back off the practice squad, another bad sign about where they see Murray's status. So that's going to be that'll be the big news. I bet you we get that news tomorrow at some point. I mean, Murray is kind of a veteran, so like he can go through a week without practice, I think, and the Tennessee wouldn't feel too bad. I think it's happened even before with him where he's just gone a week without practice and then still suited up and played. But that is probably the biggest injury, probably the biggest injury news that we're waiting on going in into this week, is whether or not we could just kind of unleash Henry in cash games, which I think would be the play. Outside of him, in this game here, Tennessee, on the Tennessee side, the Cleveland side is bringing back DeShone Kizer. They said they're a complete mess. A quarterback, he's going to come back. Anything else to get excited about in this game?
Not really. I mean, you know, we have this random love affair with Rishard Matthews, where we played him on DraftKings, and sometimes to success. I don't know that there's anything really exciting there. Basically, he needs to score a touchdown to do anything that you really care about. The floor is reasonable, but you're not going to really go there. I think Cleveland is just a total stay away for me. I don't see any reason to play any of these guys. And given how many NFL games are on the slate, Doug, I don't know if it would be wise to spend a whole lot more time on these guys.
Yeah, no, I agree. The quarterback play for Cleveland's too bad. And the receiver court, the whole team's just awful. So anyway, wait on Henry. Other than that, probably just a stay away. Delanie Walker is getting cheap if you want to go, but they really haven't targeted him in the offense too much. So if you want to go, Delanie Walker's price is dropping down into that category of guys that we can consider, but they really just, he's the same price as Safarian Jenkins, but they just really haven't targeted him that much that this year. Could be a Mariota thing where Mariota missed some time and maybe that kind of swings back Walker's way, but he looked like he was going to be a better tight end than he's really been performing this season, so maybe if you think you're buying a little low on Walker, go there. Otherwise, forget it. New Orleans in Green Bay, obviously Aaron Rodgers is going to sit out here. We talked briefly about Brett Hundley yesterday as just a cheap play if you thought he had the weapons. You know, at what point do you think the guys in the team, you know, so for instance, like Brett Hundley taking over the Green Bay job is different than, like, let's say even we thought we were equal skill-wise, is different than DeShone Kizer going in and playing quarterback for the Browns, right? Like, at what point does having guys like Jordy Nelson, Cobb, Adams, and then something of a running game between Jones and Montgomery, does that make you any more excited about a guy like Hundley, or it's just like too much?
Well, definitely not playing him in any contest on FanDuel. He's just too expensive at 6,500. DraftKings, it's a little more interesting. We talked about yesterday how some of these cheap guys, Hundley, Bortles, they unlock some of the really excellent, more expensive plays. And so maybe you talk yourself into it there, given the tools around him. But the thing that it's kind of lacking for me that I would really love to see, especially when it comes to these new quarterbacks, is like a really dynamite possession receiver or an excellent running back at catching balls out of the backfield. And Green Bay kind of lacks that to me. I mean, yeah, they have guys that have made a name for themselves on this team. And, you know, maybe Jordy runs slightly shorter routes and steps into that role. You know, Devontae Adams, I guess, has done that for Rodgers in the past. But I think the lack of, there are guys who have put up good fantasy totals, but I just can't separate that from Rodgers here. You know what I mean? Like if there were a Wes Welker type on this team, or even Larry Fitzgerald, I think I would be a little bit more bullish on it. But given the Hundley, we also had like no snaps for this guy over the course of his whole NFL career. So I think if you're going to try for cash games, understand you're taking on some significant risk. You know, it's a worthwhile risk to take perhaps at, you know, sub $5,000 prices. But yeah, on FanDuel, definitely no chance I'm playing this guy.
I think there's a misconception too from people. I see this often posted in our chat or just like as an idea floated out there that maybe is left over from an old style of NFL that, you know, young quarterbacks are going to rely on their tight end as the outlet. And I just don't think that's true. There's just no evidence to suggest that's true. If anything, it's more the running back is like the quick outlet, not the tight end. So I want to caution people about saying like, oh, you know, look at Martellus Bennett because young quarterbacks, this is their default. It's not their default. Like tight ends are in enough blocking schemes, and typically actually the tight ends use even more for blocking because they need to give that quarterback more time. So I just see that floated out there a lot, and I want to make sure people just don't think that's the case.
Oftentimes, actually, if you're just looking for big tournaments, look for a wide receiver who's, you know, that this guy has some comfort level with from the practice squad. That actually has been something that we've seen play out in the past where a quarterback steps in and then like the fourth receiver or something goes out and has a nice game on $4,500 salary. Now, it might not be the case here just because they have three established guys. Like it's going to be hard for anyone to break in with Cobb, Nelson, and Adams there, and even Geronimo Allison to some extent. But if anything, that's the trend that I've personally noticed. Don't play Martellus Bennett on the assumption that this is going to make a difference for him though.
New Orleans side, we talked a lot about Mark Ingram yesterday, seeing him as moving into that running back one territory, definitely viable in all cash games, even though his price has gone up. Anyone else on the New Orleans side? Michael Thomas still pretty heavy in the targets. Even like Drew Breed, they're supposed to put up some points here. Could you see yourself playing Breeze? I know people don't like to always play him away from home, you know, up in here in Green Bay, but where do you see some of these other Saints guys?
Yeah, I think the Saints guys are fairly interesting for big tournament stacks. I mean, Michael Thomas was awful last week and barely targeted in a game. They scored 52 points. Now, some of that might have been game script and being up, but, you know, at 7,700, you're really in a very competitive slot there, a competitive amount of salary for your cash game. So obviously you're not going to consider him there. In terms of just a stacking Breeze and Thomas, I think could be somewhat interesting. But if you look at Thomas's target share over the course of the season, the highest he's had in any given game is 17.4%. And that's bad. I mean, that's really, really low for a wide receiver one that we want to pay, you know, upwards of $8,000 for. So I don't think I like Thomas very much overall, but Drew Brees plus insert guy here that he can pass to is always a reasonable strategy for stacking for big tournaments. So I definitely think Thomas falls in that category. Maybe Willie Snead, and you know, even Alvin Kamara, I think, is a pretty reasonable big tournament play, given his use in the passing game last week. So yeah, there's stuff to like here, but primarily it's Ingram. He's the big story for me.
And I think you could even stack Brees with Ingram. Ingram does catch enough balls that I don't think that's out of the realm. It's not like, you know, they're not looking at like a Mariota Henry thing where Henry just like doesn't really catch any balls out of the backfield at all. I mean, Ingram does catch enough that I think you're not putting yourself behind the eight ball by stacking Brees and Ingram. So yeah, definitely some interesting stuff here. Love the game script here for the running backs in particular. This would be a game that, at least on the New Orleans side, we do have some exposure to in cash. Tampa Bay goes into Buffalo. There's no line on this game right now because we're still waiting on word on Jameis Winston. I'm not sure how much we can make from, you know, how many claims we can make here on the Tampa Bay side of the ball without knowing if Jameis is going to play. So the fact that there's still no line in the game means that it's completely uncertain. So I think we can kind of skip over the Tampa Bay side. I don't think we'd be going anywhere. We definitely wouldn't be playing anyone on Tampa Bay without Jameis, and it's really not a great matchup even with him. So the lack of the knowns or the many unknowns make it so I think we can pretty much skip Tampa Bay for right now. Buffalo, we talked briefly about Tyrod Taylor yesterday as a cheap play. You know, they're slight favorites here. At some point, they've still been giving McCoy the ball. They're coming off a bye. You know, at what point do we ever see LeSean McCoy return to that running back one status? It really hasn't been there at all for him this year, but they have given him the ball. He just hasn't been able to do anything with it. What are your thoughts on McCoy?
I think the fact that they've given him the ball every single game and he hasn't done anything with it yet means that we can't pay $8,000 for him. I do think for big tournament purposes, he's still got it in him. I mean, even that week one performance against the Jets was sniffing it. Like, if he had, say, punched in two touchdowns or something, he would have been the play of the week, which I get is a dopey thing. If you add two touchdowns to anyone's total, that's probably going to be true for them. But my major point is that he had 160 yards from scrimmage in that game. And yeah, that's obviously tremendous potential best overall performance upside there. We just haven't seen it, though. You know, the yards per carry have been terrible. The offensive line plays look pretty poor to me. And Tampa Bay in general is a fine matchup, but it's not like this sieve situation where you can just walk in and, you know, just run all over them or something. Like, Buffalo, I think, just isn't good enough. So I'm not going to play McCoy in any format, really. I don't know why I would, you know. Like, it's not very safe. There doesn't seem to be that much upside. I just don't. Yeah, not for me.
I keep waiting for the price to drop just a little more than it has. I mean, he started off. Well, the problem is he started off at such a high price, right? Like, so the algorithms are only going to bump you down. They're only going to bump you down in degrees, right? It's not going to like bump you down maybe all the way to where your actual performance has been. It's like it's kind of going down as it sees your performance. And he's touched the ball enough. Like, he led the team in rushes and led the team in targets in week five, 9 targets, only turned into six receptions for 26 yards. But yeah, they give him the ball enough that I feel okay about it. If he had just done anything just a little bit better. So interesting big tournament play. You really can't target anything from the passing game here. They're passing, especially with Charles Clay out for the season, their passing game is a total mess. That's actually the other thing that makes me like McCoy a little bit more, is that they just don't seem to have anybody else. And that's the only thing that actually makes me like Taylor a little less, is that they just don't seem to have anybody else. Baltimore goes into Minnesota. You know, Jerick McKinnon coming off a big week last week. Latavius Murray still got carries. How do you see this Minnesota run game here? It didn't look like they had fully committed to making Jerick McKinnon their every down back. And I probably agree with that. He doesn't really profile as that. Rushing attempts, they split them completely down the middle. How do you view the McKinnon-Murray situation here against a pretty tough Baltimore defense? And then we can talk about the receivers a little.
Yeah, I'm not happy at all to play McKinnon, I don't think. I mean, yeah, he had 20 touches last week, and that's good in a vacuum. But I always caution people against looking at a situation like that. So there's absolute touches and relative touches, right? And both of these concepts are pretty important, and I'll explain what I mean. So on one hand, you have the relative touches. This is, who do you have a running back one, or do you have a running back by committee? The reason this is significant is because there will be game scripts where teams will run more or less. And so if you're just the guy on your team, say like Le'Veon Bell, you know you're going to get all the carries. However many there are, if there are 15 or if there are 27, Le'Veon Bell will get those carries. So that's relative touches. And then there's absolute touches. And absolute touches is just how many times on average will your team run the ball or give the ball to a running back in a given game. Now, some teams do this more than others. You know, like teams like Baltimore historically have just kind of given the ball to a running back and shrugged and been like, "Man, well, this is just what we do, so good luck, dudes." But then other teams, like the Patriots, there are far fewer absolute touches to go around, right? So like last season, we saw LeGarrette Blount have a few games where he was excellent just because the game script called for him to be out there. And then we had a few games where he didn't show up completely. And that's because while he had all the relative touches for his team, he didn't have all the absolute touches. And the thing that concerns me about the Vikings here is we don't really have a lot of evidence that they're, generally speaking, going to be a team that is really high in the absolute touch or rush department, right? Like they're not a team that just goes out there and says, no matter what, come hell or high water, we're going to carry the ball 35 times this game, the way we've seen Baltimore in the past. And so then when I look at McKinnon and Murray, one guy getting 15 carries and one guy getting 15 carries, they both had 15 carries, that makes me really concerned. Like there's just so many scenarios where they just each get 9 carries or 11 carries, and then they're both totally unplayable, right? So McKinnon had 2 touchdowns. You like that he was using the passing game, but at 7,000 against a pretty good defense, I think we're butting up in the territory where you're taking on a lot more risk than the potential upside you could receive here.
I completely agree. I just don't think, he's proven time and time again that he's just not an every down run. When they've given him the ball for anything more than change of pace stuff, or like if other teams can key in that he's their sole running back, his yards per carry are really, really bad. It's when you're unsure about like what they're going to do, i.e. they have a guy like Murray here that can come in, or like when they had Cook. Cook's actually a bad example because he was getting most of the carries. But for the most part, I think I'm there.
That's the thing that scares me about McKinnon, because it's not like the Vikings organizationally have said, we just split carries. No, when they had Peterson, when they had Cook, even Matt Asiata, when he was getting all the carries, they're happy to say, hey, you can handle the workload. The one constant along the way has been McKinnon has been somebody's backup, and they've never, no matter what, it's like a sports movie. Every time he's like, hey, coach, the running back is injured. He's like, yep, you're going to get exactly half the carries again. And he just slumps his shoulders and walks away. Like they just don't see him that way. So yeah, it seems like a trap to me at 7,000.
Other news here. We mentioned this briefly yesterday. Stephon Diggs has still not practiced at all this week after not playing the previous week in week 6. Really doesn't look like he's going to play at all. We talked about Adam Thielen moving into like that wide receiver one category. Yeah, targets. Low scoring game. Baltimore does have a good defense here. It's not an ideal situation for Thielen, but what it is ideal is that it really kind of hasn't mattered where the quarterback. He's actually kind of been better with Keenum than he has been with Bradford. So it doesn't make me too worried if Case Keenum is the quarterback here, or even if it's Bradford. I don't think it's Bradford this week, but I'm not so worried about whoever plays quarterback for Minnesota. I do see Thielen as a wide receiver one, wide receiver two-ish kind of type guy with heavy workload. Kyle Rudolph also sees a big, nice jump in targets without Diggs. So a couple of guys interesting there. And Baltimore's a stay away here, right? They're all implied for under 20 points. They don't seem to have anybody that you can get excited about at all, right? I mean, there's no one on Baltimore.
Not really. I mean, Baltimore is filled with a bunch of dudes who don't really do a whole lot from a fantasy perspective. I know you talked about your boy, Javorius Buck Allen, a few times as a potential upside play if things break right for him. Things don't normally break right for him, though. So I think this is just a skip for me. Flyover team.
Yeah, no, I completely agree. Carolina goes into Chicago. Carolina's really dealt with the injury bug. They lost Greg Olsen, obviously, for the season. Now Kelvin Benjamin shows up on the injury report with Rivera saying that he's a little concerned that Benjamin's not going to be able to play this week. They are -3 favorites, mostly because the Bears are still a pretty bad team. You know, if Benjamin weren't to play, you know, where do you see some of this receiver core? Would we bump Funchess into like that wide receiver, like that upper tier, wide receiver 2 tier of targets? I mean, George, or excuse me, I was going to say Kittle. Look at these freaking tight ends confused. Ed Dixon, Ed Dixon's also seen a decent amount of targets. Christian McCaffrey. Like, where do we see these guys if Benjamin wasn't playing?
I mean, Funchess is relatively interesting, I guess. Like, he has had pretty decent target share. He's put together pretty decent reception totals in two of the last 3 weeks. He is a red zone target for them, so I think he is a consideration, but for big tournaments only. Like, he can't hold the jockstrap as some of these other players, right? Like Adam Thielen, Larry Fitzgerald, Jarvis Landry. He's just nowhere near those guys in terms of overall safety, whether Benjamin plays or not. I think Benjamin, you know, depending on the exact level of his health, we do like to see him putting up relatively consistent totals from week to week. A little of that is, you know, he looks a little bit like a paper tiger to me, like, you know, 104 yards on four receptions on 7% target share, 14 points, but on 12% target share the following week. Like, I'm not very high on Benjamin again. He's right in that no man's land price where there's just some amazing plays. So for the Carolina side of the ball, not super interested. Maybe outside of Ed Dixon, I do think, you know, we have seen Carolina prioritize the tight end in the past and run some percentage of their plays just directly targeted at the tight end. So, you know, in the quagmire that is the tight end position this season, he's a guy that you can play. But overall, Carolina is just a wasteland for my money.
Yeah, no, I think, like I said, McCaffrey has still seen a decent amount of targets. They just don't run the ball with him enough. Like, if he was a cheap wide receiver, I think we'd consider him, but they just don't seem to want to run him between the tackles really at all. Like, only four carries last week. Jonathan Stewart only had 8 carries. I know they were throwing the ball because they were coming from behind a lot. I wish they would just kind of commit to one or the other, but they don't. I mean, again, McCaffrey, though, had 14 targets. So if he was like a cheap wide receiver, you know, even like a $6,000 wide receiver, we would probably go to this play all day long. But the fact that he's priced in this running back category kind of just doesn't make sense for him. Chicago side of the ball, you know, Jordan Howard still gets a ton of carries. He's sort of in that elite carry category. I just don't know kind of what you do with him on a week to week basis. We don't have, like, we gave him like 19 carries and a bunch of targets, not a bunch of targets, maybe like three targets, something like that, four targets. And he still kind of just doesn't show up very high on the list. Carolina's got a good defense here. Where do you see Howard? Do you see him as a GPP play because of the volume?
Yeah, exactly. He's an upside play based on the volume, and you can do better for cash game purposes. So, like, you're just going to play Mark Ingram at the same price. Maybe, I mean, some people will play Howard alongside Ingram, but I'd rather just go a little cheaper, play Peterson maybe, or, you know, go down to Derrick Henry if Murray sits. But I think Howard is a potential consideration if there were no such thing as Mark Ingram. But even still, like, while the carries and the touches are there and the opportunity seems to be relatively constant, it's a pretty up-and-down situation. And there's still that little Tarik Cohen thing peeking around in the back of my mind, like, if he starts going off. I know that hasn't happened recently, but just the fact that that's in play has me a little spooked. But overall, yeah, big tournament play, absolutely. Like, 6,800 is a tremendous price for a guy who touched the ball 37 times last game. So that's there's definitely a lot to like about Howard. And I hope to consider him for cash games in the future. Like, if he goes out there and gets like 25 touches this game, and then the next time he has a really good matchup, then I'll happily play the guy at these prices for sure.
Yeah, they just don't have any quarterback play, and that's the problem with him, and that's going to keep the price driven down probably for the rest of the season, is that, you know, when the quarterback play just isn't there for a guy, you just...
Yeah, they stack the box. Yeah, it's great.
It just limits the upside. Jacksonville and Indiana, or excuse me, Indianapolis. Again, I'm like, when I start switching between basketball
brain.
Yeah, just like all the little changes in the way these teams are worded and named gets me a little confused. But
sorry, buddy.
Jacksonville goes into Indianapolis. We talked a lot about Fournette yesterday. We did actually talk about Bortles as a consideration in cash game plays on DraftKings, simply because the price is so low at $4,700. That doesn't really, not much needs to happen at a $4,700 price tag. Outside of those two guys, it doesn't seem like to me Jacksonville is just so intent on running the ball that I just don't know. You know, we've seen games where Bortles throws the ball like 25 times or less, right? Because they're saying, we just want to run the ball. I think for that, it takes their wide receiver core pretty much out of play, out of anything, but just completely, you know, dart throw in the dark kind of plays on that side. In the, I don't know, I mean, anything here in this game, I'm kind of grasping at straws.
Yeah, well, I mean, for Fournette, I think it's worth just reemphasizing that he's sort of black swan, three down back in the NFL right now. Super consistent this season. Worst game of the year, 13 fantasy points. That's just I haven't looked and pulled this up specifically, but of the running backs I'm thinking of, that's the best worst game of anyone in the NFL. I might be wrong on that, but I'm fairly confident that it's at least in the top three. So paying $9,000, that's the type of production that's worth $9,000, when you can pretty safely say that you're definitely going to get 13-plus points with room for a lot more in a nice matchup with Indy. I think he's definitely in consideration. There are other guys on Indy. I mean, and that's it for Jacksonville for me. I mean, we talked about Bortles as a potential cash game play if you want to reach on DraftKings. As you go over to Indy, you know, so one of our chatters was asking us about T.Y. Hilton. Hilton, I think, is as he's always been, which is a really good upside play, even with different quarterback play, but just nothing else, right? Like, you can't play this guy at $7,600 in cash games, right?
Well, you can play him in tournament. No, not in cash games at all, for sure.
Yeah.
But he's been consistently the most volatile. Is that a term? Is that like a
sure.
Yeah, consistently the most volatile receiver in the league. He was like that even with Luck last year, right? He had like one of the highest coefficient of variations that you'll ever see from wide receiver in his price tier, and that looks like it's going to be probably the case again this season, because he has two elite games on his resume, and the rest of the games are the other four games are just games where you're jumping off a cliff with this guy, right? Because he has a 7-for-153 and a 7-for-177. And then there's games that he has one catch, three catches, four catches, three catches, right? So I think from that point of view, I think you get a lot of separation on him. He is the guy, the exact guy you want to play in tournaments, right? You kind of like wouldn't mind playing him week to week in tournaments if you could withstand the variance on the bankroll.
because you get the high target share and then the low conversion percentage. So the reason that leads to variance is if you get, say, and Hilton doesn't get this now, but in the past, or look at DeAndre Hopkins maybe, when you get like double-digit targets, but you convert very few of them generally, sometimes you just convert them all, or 10 out of 11 or something, and all of a sudden you're priced like a guy who catches 5 or 6 balls a game, which is what you do on average, but what you have that the Larry Fitzgerald or even Adam Thielen types have that they don't have is sometimes you just get all of your downfield 11 out of 13 targets and you just have 220 yards and a couple touchdowns. So yeah, that's the exact guy. Mike Evans, we skipped over him earlier, but he's another guy in that category. But yeah, just don't play him for cash. And I don't think for Indy there's anything else remotely interesting on the offensive side of the ball in this contest that we can really look at.
I wish they would give Marlon Mack some more carries over Frank Gore. They don't seem to want to do that. Jacksonville does have the 31st ranked rush defense in the league in terms of DVOA. Indy just doesn't have the running backs that you really want to target here is the problem. Yeah. So again, if they were willing to just completely shift to Mack, who looks just like much a better running back, I think I'd maybe change my tune there, but they don't seem willing to do that. They are number one against the pass this season in DVOA, which is going to knock guys like Hilton down as well. Brissett too. You know, I think you can pass on Jacksonville. I think that DVOA rank is a little skewed because of the teams they faced. But all in all, it is not a great matchup. Last 1 o'clock game is Arizona goes into LA. We talked at length yesterday about Adrian Peterson and Larry Fitzgerald, both being very solid cash plays. If you want our thoughts there, go back and listen to yesterday's podcast. I don't think we need to rehash that. On the Rams side of the ball, though, Todd Gurley, you know, where do we stand with Gurley here in terms of his usage? It's been elite at times. It's dropped off. It seems like it's dropped off just a tad over the last couple of weeks. Do we still want to put him? Never mind. He had still had 23 carries last week. It was two weeks before that he had been used a little less in the pass game over the last 2 weeks, though. That's actually where it's dipped down his overall usage. Do we still want to put Gurley? And for a while, we had him right below that Le'Veon Bell class of running back. Do we still want to keep him there? He's kind of dropped down a little bit more because of how they use them maybe less in the passing game. Where do you stand on Gurley?
Yeah, I think Gurley is still a great play. I think we can pretty much ignore the game against Seattle. The performance against Jacksonville was right in line with what we had come to expect from him in terms of a yardage output. He just didn't punch the ball in the end zone. And you know, he had been running hot in touchdowns earlier in the season. He had a touchdown in each of his first four games. He had two touchdowns or more in three of his first four games, and then has been on a touchdown drought the last couple games. But those will turn around. You know, if you touch the ball on a pretty good offense 20 plus times per game, you just find the end zone with some regularity. So I still really like Gurley. I don't know if it's where I'm going to land for this week. I just don't know that it's a week that I want to spend up at running back, given some really good cheaper options. With a gun to my head, you couldn't convince me that Gurley was going to definitely outscore Mark Ingram, for instance. And the $1,300 price obviously matters quite a bit. So really love Gurley. I think he's a great play going forward for the rest of the season. Would be happy to play him in cash games here, given the other contextual factors. I just think we might be able to do better.
Yeah, they have one of the higher totals on the board, slight favorites at home. Those are the things that kind of check the boxes for when you're looking for Just running back play. Yeah, 25 implied points on a week where this overall, like last week, we just had a huge implied point total just across the NFL. That's not the case this week. We have a few teams that are right around that 25 mark, and really most are kind of, a lot of them are just 20 or less. And so if we're targeting teams that are expected to put up points, Rams really are one of them. And Gurley, yeah, you know, especially with the way that Arizona secondary shakes out, and just, I mean, the Rams don't have much in the passing game to begin with, but it does seem like this is a week. If they get ahead, Gurley could really, really see pretty elite volume, and he's cheaper than the rest of those guys above. Well, obviously everyone's cheaper than the guys above him, but he's cheaper than the group of guys that we kind of put him in the class of Bell, Elliott, and Fournette. Before we get to the 4 o'clock games, hit us up with a sponsor.
Yeah, let's talk about FantasyFactor.com. So Fantasy Factor is a great place to go if you want to play DFS NFL this weekend, but you don't want to play against sharks who put in hundreds and hundreds of lineups. I really like Fantasy Factor as a really solid, great, slick software for the typical salary game, salary cap game that you're used to, with the only difference that, yeah, Doug isn't in there gobbling up all your money and making all the perfect plays and running off with all of it. So check out FantasyFactor.com. Great place to play if you're going to play, say, $5 to $100 a weekend. And in fact, they have their $500 NFL free roll coming up again this weekend too. So check them out. You could click through their links on our site or just go to FantasyFactor.com and get started today.
So let's get into the 4 o'clock games. I did make a mistake. I'm going to go back and just give a little editor's note correction here. That yesterday when we were talking about cash games, one guy that we left out was Ezekiel Elliott. And I really, and the reason he left out, just as a point of honesty, is when he had been reinstated to play again, our system was picking him up in the audit for how the team was shaking out, but he had a zero projection because we just have, when you have a label as out in terms of our injury feed, which he still had, he gets a zero. And so it didn't end up being like in part of the overall projections once we pushed him live. Had he been, he would have led, at least for us, he would have led the cash game article yesterday. 8,700 against San Francisco is right now for FanDuel coming in all of our lineups. And so I feel bad because I would have put him in the article and would have talked about him extensively. We can do it now, but that really should have been. I didn't want anyone to think this like bait and switch territory.
These are our secret plays.
Don't really operate like that. But, you know, where do we put Elliott? We talked about Dak as a pretty very strong, possibly chalk cash game play on FanDuel. I mean, are we feel comfortable stacking him and Elliott here on FanDuel? It's really FanDuel specific because he's a little more expensive on the DraftKings. But you know, would we find going a game stack like that for cash and feeling good about the floor?
Yeah, I think so. Dallas, one of the highest totals on the week this week, especially if teams that qualify on the main slate here. And I think, you know, it's a little interesting because a lot of what's driving Elliott's ranking in our system is actually just the fact that he's a little bit underpriced relative to his production. And so it's less a matchup with San Francisco. And San Francisco is a fine matchup. You know, they're below average team against the run, obviously gotten beat up a few times this season, and they stand to be losing in any game that they play pretty much. So I'm always happy to take a running back in a spot like that, particularly on a team where Elliott is another guy like Fournette, where the opportunity is just locked in, right? Like 33 touches last week, 25 the week before that, 25, 13 against Denver, not so great, but then 29 against the Giants. So Elliott, yeah, he's the three down back, goal line back, the whole package. And at 8,700, that's just a little too cheap. Like, you know, I think normally we'd be paying more like the 9,000, 9,200 for him in a spot like this. And since we don't have to, he just kind of becomes a default play. I think really that's all there is to it.
Yeah, no, I think it's the price thing. You know, coming in 1,000 less than Bell, coming in less than all these other running backs, those top tier running backs that we talked about, I'm just completely fine with it. And like I said, I feel bad that I didn't. I should have just done an extensive write up about him. And I feel bad when those kind of things happen.
Yeah, I feel bad for you.
I just want to make sure. Apologize. He is sixth overall in rushes this season, and that's on the bye week. So he would be right up there in the Bell, you know, assuming that he just got like a normal week of carries last week. If they hadn't had the bye, he'd be right up there with Bell, Fournette, and Kareem Hunt, and probably actually even more than Hunt in terms of, and I'm encouraged too, because he's actually been used more in the passing game this year. He's not used as much in the passing game as those other guys. Bell, Fournette, Hunt, and Gurley are all thrown to definitely more than he is. But he's gotten more looks this season than last season. That's an encouraging sign. So all signs pointing to using Elliott in cash. Outside of them, I mean, San Francisco, really, can you do anything here with San Francisco? George Kittle, maybe? I don't know. Their offense seems like a complete mess. I guess they might start C.J. Beathard at quarterback. I'm not even positive. Is San Francisco just like a total skip here?
Yeah, probably. I mean, again, if you're just adding to your stable of big tournament lineups, maybe Carlos Hyde. He had 2 touchdowns again last week. The usage has gone down for Hyde, which has been pretty troubling. You know, we kind of thought he would be a guy who'd get a lot of, you know, we talked about the absolute versus relative carry. We thought that San Francisco would be, well, he would be the heavy relative carry guy, and that they would have more absolute carries, and it hasn't totally borne out that way, but yeah, he's cheap. Maybe you throw a Hail Mary there. Otherwise, Pierre Garçon, another guy who, you know, potentially, you never want to really go all in on a guy with an uncertain quarterback situation, but he is getting a lot of targets. He has gotten a lot of targets in the past, and he is the kind of receiver that new quarterbacks feel very comfortable with, simply because he runs such, you know, kind of basic short routes. So I think he's an interesting big tournament play, not something you're ever going to consider, given the actual elite talent we have at the exact same price point on FanDuel.
Yeah, good call. Garçon is definitely a good DraftKings consideration at his price. Wish the quarterback play was better, but it's just not. Seattle goes into face the Giants. We did talk about Russell Wilson yesterday as a play, and possibly in cash games, though he might probably prefer Dak Prescott at the same price. Though I do like Wilson's. I don't mind the matchup here for Wilson. Another week, or you know, they're coming off the bye. In week 5, it was just another week of running back carousel for Seattle. It's just another year of this where Eddie Lacy gets 9 carries, Rawls gets 8 carries, McKissick gets 2 carries, and you just don't feel good about any of it. No news has come out that they plan to change that at all, so I'm not sure you can trust the Seattle run game ever, I don't think would be my plan. I don't think I'm ever going to go back to that down that well, no matter what Pete Carroll says. Doug Baldwin probably draws Janoris Jenkins. I don't know that side if you're really – that's a matchup you're looking to get all that excited about. How do you feel about, like, the wide receiver two situations if you think that Baldwin's going to draw blanket coverage from Jenkins?
Yeah, Baldwin drawing blanket coverage is all well and good, but, I mean, is there anyone here with enough talent or track record to really, you know, impress upon you that there's a big opportunity opening up? I just don't see Seattle's passing game that way, and that they seem to default more to – you know, Wilson taking off or carrying the ball or, you know, just other things rather than kind of dumping it down and giving some wide receiver two type 12 targets or whatever.
Yeah, the Giants have gotten beat up pretty bad against tight ends this season. I think
Jimmy Graham, sure.
Yeah, that'd be the only thing I would probably want to possibly look at here right now. Yeah, they rank 20th in DVOA against tight ends. It seems like worse because it seems like tight ends have kind of beat up on them every week. So I don't know if that's somewhat adjusted for schedule or whatnot, but and I mean the game against Denver probably helped them because Denver didn't do anything, so that probably was able to help just their overall ranking. Yes, I don't mind Graham in this situation, but other than that, I just really can't get all that excited about Seattle. They're just kind of a one man team. I like Wilson for this because Wilson seems just independent of the rest of the personnel.
Yeah.
On the Giants side, we saw them come off a week where they surprised Denver. They're still kind of playing with the same B squad that they're playing that they played with last week. They're still -4.5, or they're +4.5 underdogs at home against Seattle. I think they're gonna have much tougher sledding here with Seattle coming off the bye. It looks like they're gonna get Sterling Shepard back, but he's gonna draw Richard Sherman. So I think there's gonna be weeks where Shepard is probably back in play with Beckham and Marshall out for the season. I'm just not sure this is the week. Evan Ingram, anything with a run game here, anything with Giants that you want to consider even. I mean, cash is really tough sled, and I mean, even for upside.
Yeah, no, I like Ingram. I think Ingram's a very solid play among the group of tight ends that everyone will be choosing from this week. You know, if you look at his track record in the season, aside from that Chargers game, which again, we played him in every single lineup, he's been very consistent. You know, 4 receptions is his fewest otherwise, 44 yards is his fewest otherwise, and you'll be hard pressed to find any tight end with a projection higher than 40 yards this week. So, you know, outside of the Gronk category, maybe Graham. But yeah, Ingram, very reasonably priced. Okay matchup here, nothing special, but a guy you can look at for cash games, which is much more than you can say for anyone else on the Giants side of the ball here.
Denver goes in to play the Chargers. Denver, obviously, again, coming off tough loss last week against Giants, where they just looked like they never even, you know, came out of the locker room to play. Chargers, they're kind of a decent defense. I'm not sure they're not an elite defense, not a defense that you really want to completely target against, though you don't want to avoid. Broncos look like they're going to be without Emmanuel Sanders. Where does that put guys like Benny Fowler, Demaryius Thomas in the passing game? They're not projected for a ton of points here, but losing Sanders does open up a lot of targets.
Yeah, I think that, you know, it's kind of interesting. The Chargers this season have actually allowed the most overall rushing yards of any team in the NFL. And I think that makes a pretty interesting spot for Anderson. For big tournament plays, I think we've seen now that his production is too variable to really target him for cash, even at a pretty reasonable price point here. But I think for big tournaments, he's an excellent play. The Chargers have not only given up a lot of yards, they've given up a lot of yards per carry too. So yeah, I think I really like Anderson there. As for the passing game, I mean, you've talked about how Demaryius Thomas is probably a little bit underrated right now as compared to his price. He's the type of guy that if he showed up in my cash game lineup for whatever reason when I pressed calculate over at DFSR.com, that I wouldn't like X him out immediately, which is more than I can say for some people. But I also think that you're probably signing up for a little bit more variance than you might be getting from guys like Fitzgerald or Thielen. I think that it's, you know, arguably more upside, like the 25% target share he had last week, 10 catches for 133 yards. That leads me to believe that when things are not going according to plan for Denver, the plan is to try to get back in it by passing to Thomas. And, you know, when I'm trying to build my big tournament lineups in particular, I want to be able to tell myself a story where my guy is the best overall play at his position for a given day. And I think Thomas does have that in a way that, say, Keenan Allen doesn't, you know. And so if you're just comparing these two guys at the same price in the same game, like if the Chargers get up a little bit and but Denver has to play catch up, you could see Thomas featured in both the short passing and the long passing game. And so I think from that perspective, definitely a good guy to keep under radar for big tourneys.
Yeah, Keenan Allen did show up in the injury report yesterday. He draws a very tough matchup. He's a guy that we've liked pretty consistently since the start of the season, though. This week, getting Tlaib and the Harris combination is just probably an avoid. I don't really have much love. I don't really want to go. I really never want to target. You never want to target anyone against the Denver passing defense. And, I mean, Melvin Gordon, he kind of got back into the passing game last week. Their total is low. Denver defense is very, very good. This is a spot where we want to target against Denver defense. They rank first in the league against the rush. Actually, only 18th against the pass this season, which I find to be interesting in terms of DVOA. But is Gordon kind of an avoid situation just because of the matchup?
Yeah, I'm not going to play Gordon. I think he's an interesting guy to circle back around to next week if the price drops. But for now, nah, you can't play the guy.
Cincinnati goes coming off the bye, going in to play Pittsburgh. We talked a lot about Le'Veon Bell and Antonio Brown yesterday as basically just two of the most elite guys at each of their positions in terms of where they get in terms of their target share and just in terms of their overall usage. So go back and listen to our thoughts there. Both are very much in play. And I think we landed that we probably possibly rather play Brown if having to choose between the two of them, just because there were a few other running back options. Cincinnati side, I mean, they're really kind of just left with AJ Green and the guys and just a rotation of guys in the backfield that they haven't seemed to be able to land on completely. Though I guess Mixon did out carry the other two guys before the week 5 bye. Let me just look at that real quick. Yeah, he had 15 carries for 51 yards and a touchdown. Any interest here if you think that the carries for Mixon still increase, or AJ Green if you think they're playing catch up?
Yeah, AJ Green, I think, you know, in that category of guys who could put up the biggest total at his position, AJ Green's definitely in that category. I think that, you know, if I'm looking at Mixon, I think it's a little bit closer. You know, the usage has generally been there, but the yards per carry have been so bad that it's hard to imagine, you know, kind of what I'm trying to do. Like, again, fine, big tournaments, 5,600 is not very much to pay, but, you know, the 3.4 yards per carry, the 15 carries, 17, 18 carries, these aren't bad numbers by any stretch, but they're just not impressive either. And so I just don't, yeah, if I'm really trying to figure out who the best plays in my position are, Mixon isn't going to really show up on the radar.
The 8:30 game is Atlanta goes into New England. This game has by far the highest over under of the week. It's not included on the DraftKings.
Oh God, it's crazy.
I always get a little weird out here because when we see a game that is 56 over under with a pretty thin spread, so you got to assume the game is going to stay kind of close. And yet, you know, when we run lineups here, we don't have anyone from this game showing up. Do you think that's because these two teams have just been content to spread the ball out completely between all their players, and they're all maybe just a little overpriced? Because it's weird. It's going to be weird going into Sunday night with a game that's going to almost definitely put up a lot of points just between these two defenses and their respective offenses, and to not have any guys from the game possibly, you know, as in terms of just how lineup iterations are running now on FanDuel. Is that going to be weird, or is it just the kind of the nature of how these two teams play?
Yeah, what happens when you're playing a DFS sport, that prices will tend to normalize to a team's average production, right? And so take a team like Patriots. They have, the third highest point total in the AFC this season. And if you go over to Atlanta, Atlanta's been kind of bad at scoring points this season. But nonetheless, both teams, they kind of have known quantities, and you kind of know where the production is going to come from. And in cases like that, the prices tend to be somewhat fair. And in this case, the prices are actually just a little unfair. Like Matt Ryan hasn't really justified an $8,700 price tag this season, right? I mean, I don't know it's just based on reputation from the past or what, but his best game of the season is 18 points. So you just can't play the guy on an $8,700 price tag. And it's not all due to matchups either. Like, he's had plenty of pretty reasonable matchups. And so you take him off the table, and then you turn to the running backs. Well, Atlanta also likes to share carries among a few guys. So Devontae Freeman has had some excellent weeks, but he's also $7,800, which is the same price we're normally paying for guys that, you know, are in that very clear cut, I'm the guy on my team category. And while he's mostly the guy, last week I split the carries right up the middle with Tevin Coleman, right? So you can't really play those guys, mostly because you don't know who it's going to be. Maybe it'll be Coleman, maybe it'll be Freeman. But if you're going to go in and go all in on either, you're going to pay a starting running back salary for a guy who might get nine carries. And that's a pretty bitter pill to swallow. You go over to Julio Jones, excellent receiver, but expensive, $8,800. Again, not really sustaining this price in any kind of consistent way. If you look at his track record over the course of the season, it's going to look a lot more like, you know, a Keenan Allen type guy than anything else. Best game of the year, 13 fantasy points, right? So at what point, I know the points are probably going to come from somewhere, but you're playing an absolute premium to play anyone in this game. And I just don't know why you would need to do that when you just have excellent values elsewhere. Like, maybe if this were short slate, certainly Sunday into Monday, maybe you guess, certainly for big tournaments, if you want to try and pick a winner here, be my guest. But yeah, for your cases, if you're just cash games, you're looking for safety, I just don't know who the guy in this game is that has consistently provided value at his current price. And that's why, for me, it's kind of a stay away.
I know they had the bye, but Julio Jones is like the 32nd most targeted receiver in football right now. So I just don't, I mean, at some point, the price just is going to have to come down, right? I think it stays up there because of his name. But he's been less targeted than guys like, I mean, Beckham, I mean, who's hurt for weeks. Rashard Matthews has more targets than
he's a bad fantasy play. That's all there is to it. Like, at $8,800, it's just simply a bad play. You've been, if you played Julio Jones any game for the whole season, you've been devastated each week. So I don't know why that would change this week. I mean, it might. Like, so he certainly has a lot of upside here, and I know that I'm going to be, you know, not happy if I go into the Sunday night and say I'm like 13 points ahead of the cash line, and I see that Julio Jones is of 60% start, I'm not going to be happy. Like, you know, I'm going to be nervous that he's going to go off and do some kind of big stuff, because he certainly has that level of talent, which makes him, I guess, an interesting big tournament play. But do not play him over a guy like Antonio Brown. I get that Brown's more expensive, but just don't do it. It's not, you're seeing a name and you're remembering old production. That has not been the production this season.
Yeah, it's been interesting with him. It's where the name does seem to eclipse anything that's actually the reality of him on the field. Patriots side of the ball, you know, Brady kind of strikes me as sort of like that naked quarterback kind of guy that you can play independent of his matchup. Gronk is still in a good matchup here. Hogan has had plenty of red zone targets as well. So if you want to play Brady, and you think that Brady is going to be, you think this is going to be a pass happy game for them, which it very well could be, we have him basically ranked as, he and Dak are basically the top ranked quarterbacks in our system in terms of overall price. I think it's completely reasonable. Game script definitely should favor it. So Brady would be another one that if we're ahead of the cash line and you saw Brady as like a 30% start in cash games, I would feel pretty bad about it going into that Sunday night game, because he just has as much upside as any other quarterback. It's his lack of running for our system that is going to always just kind of keep him just a tick below. And even without that, he's still right up there. Last game, 8:30 Monday night game, Washington goes into Philadelphia. Washington looks like they're going to get Rob Kelly back, so I think that probably takes the running back situation for them off the board. You know, we haven't really seen anyone solidify to be like the pass catcher on Washington this season. I'm taking the L on Terrell Pryor for sure. I thought for definite sure it was going to be him. That really just hasn't worked out even moderately to start this year. And then last week, I know they ran the ball a lot, but they had 1, 2, 3, 4, they had five guys with five targets. And then 4-3-3-1. I mean, Cousins was just spread the ball on all over the place. You trust at anything with the Washington pass game at all?
Not really. And I think just it's worth pointing out, I always talk about this at the beginning of the season, but we have two new poster boys for this year. And it's going to be the same thing again next year. And we're going to go back down this rabbit hole again. But just, I would love to hear a list. If any listeners are out there, you can email me, james@dfsr.com. Who are the receivers that changed team this season that are good? That's all. I just want to know. It's not Alshon Jeffrey and it's not Terrell Pryor, so maybe it's somebody else that I'm forgetting about. But the receiver, it's just so hard to change teams as a receiver, both getting synced up with a quarterback. That quarterback already has guys he likes. Generally, when receivers are switching teams, they're also older, right? It's not like they're just coming up and they're, you know, these fresh legs that have insane speed or whatever. And so, yeah, receivers changing teams, it almost, especially when you were good on the old team. Like sometimes a guy like, you know, Wes Welker or something was kind of coming out in Miami, goes to New England, is great. But when receivers switch teams, they tend to suck. So I'm going to stick with that in the future. Hopefully we can archive this conversation when everything switches on a dime and everything changes for these guys. But for right now, I'm not going to be playing Terrell Pryor or Alshon Jeffrey or any of these guys until they show me sustained track record with their quarterback in that situation. And it almost doesn't matter what the price is until I really see it. So yeah, I'm disgusted, Doug. You may be able to tell that I'm disgusted. I'm making a face like I just ate a yellow warhead, you know. It's a throwback right there. Yeah.
Well, on that note, let's we're gonna get out of here. DFSR.com/NBA gives you that free 3-day trial at the projection system that we mentioned. Free for 3 days, right now $29.95 a month for a very short time until the beginning of next week when the prices go up. We're also going to do our NBA podcast, so go sign up for that, rate and review both podcasts. That gives us a lot of love on iTunes and really helps us climb up the iTunes charts. We'll be back again next week breaking down, taking back a look at whatever happens here on Sunday and looking ahead to week 8, so go check that out. Thanks for following along. We'll talk to you again next week.